athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event. Then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
As always, thank you for joining me on another edition of Box to Row. The absolutely huge news of the week: Bill Belichick now going to college football. Okay, he didn't have a job, obviously, in the National Football League after 20 years with as the head coach of the New England Patriots. It came to an end after last season. Nobody picked him up. And so now he is the new head football coach at North Carolina. It's an interesting dynamic. I look at it from a couple of different ways. One, I'm very surprised. And look, Bill Belichick did what he had to do, right? Like, there were no offers coming from any teams in the National Football League. And quite frankly, I don't think that Bill Belichick will ever coach in the National Football League again. Okay. Look at the potential. All right. Let's look at the openings. There were a lot of openings for 2024 coming into the 2024 season. Nobody. He had a couple of interviews. Nobody selected Bill Belichick. And by the way, you know, we'll see what happens. I don't know that you can judge Jerod Mayo. You can't really judge him in the first season, but things are not going well so far in New England. You think if Bill Belichick were there, things would be going better. Now, again, ever since Tom Brady left to go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, it just hasn't been good, hasn't boded well for Bill Belichick at all. So those that like to make the argument, was it Bill Belichick? Was it Tom Brady? Well, it very much looks like it was Tom Brady. Because again, not only did things not go well after Tom Brady left, but now but for the 2024 season, Bill Belichick did not even have a job in the National Football League. And so now he had to go to college and now is the head coach at North Carolina. So from the Bill Belichick perspective, I guess, look, if they're going to pay you $10 million, it's reported that he's getting paid $10 million a year. I don't believe he was making $10 million a year as the head coach of the Patriots. I mean, if somebody's going to pay you $10 million a year to do something that A, you love, B, you've done all of your life, you're probably going to take it. Now, the dynamics between the National Football League and college football are immense. I know a lot of people like to think that college football, even major college football, is professional football. I guess in the NIL world of things and that, yes, but there's an immense difference. Okay, I know a lot of people don't want to hear that, but that's just the reality of the situation. So now he comes to college to coach. But again, if I can understand from both perspectives, A, from the Bill Belichick perspective, they're going to pay you $10 million a year. It's a lot different coaching in college than it is in the National Football League, but $10 million is $10 million, and why not take it, especially that you don't have a job? The prospects for next year are slim. I mean, think about some of the job openings that would come up for next year. Perhaps the Jaguars, perhaps the Giants would come up for next year. Perhaps the Cowboys would come up for next year. We know the Jets job is going to be open for next year. So there are some jobs that are open, but I'm sure Bill Belichick, his agent, did their due diligence probably saw that either the jobs that were coming open, most notably, I think, well, now the Giants is, I don't think the Giants job is going to be open next year. I just don't think it is. But certainly the Jets, the Jaguars, we don't know that, but we know the Jets, perhaps the Jaguars, there are a couple of other jobs that may become open this year. I don't think as many as we had in 2000 or after the 2023 season. So the prospects were probably very slim. If you couldn't get a job coming into the 2024 season, the likelihood is you're not going to get a job coming into the 2025 season. And like I said initially, I don't think Bill Belichick will ever coach in the National Football League again. So why not coach, even if it's college, where they're going to pay you $10 million? Like, I get that. That's no problem with that. From the UNC side, it's interesting. I look at UNC, and I'm going to give you, I give UNC a lot of credit, okay? There are some deep, of course, we're here in Raleigh, so we're in this area. I don't know all the inner workings, you know, certainly of UNC and how it all works. I don't know that, but I can tell you this. UNC is about trying to, UNC is about trying to win championships. I mean, I guess I would say that, although I don't think Bill Belichick wins a championship. I don't think he wins a championship as the head coach at UNC. I just don't think it's going to happen, okay, because history has said as much. UNC has swung big in the past, i.e., Butch Davis. Remember Butch Davis from Miami, and of course, he also coached in the National Football League. It didn't work out for Butch Davis and Miami. Okay, Mac Brown twice. The first time around with Mac Brown, did some really solid things, and I just don't know what it is. I mean, I think what it is that there are just better teams and better programs in the ACC, a la Clemson, a la Florida State, maybe not more recently, a la Miami. You know, they're just better programs that are going to win the title or have a better opportunity. I think Duke has a better opportunity to win an ACC championship than does UNC. Yes, I said that. You know, that said, I give UNC a lot of credit. A lot of deep pockets, obviously, at UNC. Swung for Butch Davis, as I mentioned. It didn't work out. Mac Brown, the first time, was doing some good things. He left to go to Texas. What happens? He wins a national championship at Texas. I mean, the landscape, and we've got some really good high school football. We've got some, you know, some good programs here in North Carolina. You think you're going to go up and compete against the likes of Texas and Georgia for national championships in this day and age of college football? Not likely at all. You know, even the schools here have trouble keeping the best players in the state. A lot of the best players from the state of North Carolina leave. They don't go to UNC. They don't go to NC State. They go out of state to go play, right? So, you know, and now, could that be changed because Bill Belichick comes in? Yeah, well, it could be. And maybe it will. And maybe some of the best players will stay home and play in particular at UNC. But getting players from a historical standpoint has never been a problem of Carolina. Look, Lawrence Taylor played at Carolina. Okay, maybe the best defensive, we speak about Bill Belichick, maybe the best defensive player to ever play in the National Football League played at Carolina, never won a championship. You know, I'm just trying to think of some off the top of my head that were really, like, really, really good players. Jeff Saturday played at Carolina. You know, a name that a lot of people may not remember, but UNC people, ACC people are going to remember. Kelvin Bryant, like some really great players that were great at Carolina, played, never won a championship. So, look, I give UNC credit because it is going out to try to win championships. Now, the problem is, It just hasn't gotten done in for however long it's been. Okay, that's number one. But let's say even if you don't win a championship, you pay a guy $10 million a year because of the name. And again, brought Butch Davis in. I don't know how much he got paid, but paid him a bunch of money, right? Because of the name. He's going to be able to attract a certain kind of player, attract certain players. It just didn't work out. Mack Brown, not only the first time, but really more so the second time around. And again, trying to, and again, I get it. It didn't go well for UNC this year. But at least what Mack Brown did, because the program was not in a great place before Mack Brown came back. So now it's in a good place. And by the way, I would also make the point that the program is in great enough place now because of Mack Brown that would allow for a Bill Belichick to come in now. But he's going to be able to recruit some players. But again, let me go back to that point. Give UNC a lot of credit. Wants to try to win a championship. I just don't think it's going to happen. That said, okay, what is going to happen now? We automatically assume now that, oh, the program is going to rise up. Now, it's going to be better, certainly. Will it win a ACC championship? I don't think so. Will it get better players into the program? Probably, but you're not going to out-recruit Deion Sanders at Colorado, so you're going to get players, but you may not get the prime players. You're not going to out-recruit, you're not going to out-recruit Kirby Smart at Georgia. You're not going to out-recruit a lot of these established programs that are in contention for the national championship each and every year. So while this is a home run type of swing by UNC, I think what it does is it elevates UNC's now not that the UNC brand is a big time brand. Now let's get it straight. But I think more so from a basketball standpoint, now and historically, from a Jordan, of course, Michael Jordan went to Carolina, so that helps in part of the brand in terms of UNC. Okay, but to think that Bill Belichick's gonna out recruit some of these other programs, and a lot of times it's not just all about, it's about recruiting, but you gotta coach the guys up. Now he's gonna be able to do that, no question about it. He's kind of old school. He's gonna have to acclimate himself a little bit but a lot to college kids, because college kids are different now than even they were 10 years ago. You got to explain things to them. Like, 10 years ago and more, you told a kid this, they went and did it. Now you got to explain everything to these young people. Okay. It's a different age and a different time. And I'm interested to see what's going to happen ultimately at UNC. We've got a good show for you today here on Box to Row. As a matter of fact, we're going to be joined by funny man Anthony Anderson here today. I've got South Carolina State versus Jackson State talk still to come. Also, a couple of moves for either former HBCU coaches or HBCU alums at the FBS level. A lot of movement this week. We've got all of that and Anthony Anderson still to come here on Box to Row. Keep it locked.
On the way, it's more of From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware. Right here.
If you have diabetes, listen up. If you have insurance, you can qualify for a continuous glucose monitor. With a CGM, you can continuously track your levels and trends and spend more time in range, significantly lowering your A1C. More importantly, a CGM eliminates the one thing most people with diabetes hate, painful finger sticks. Order your new continuous glucose monitor today. If you use insulin and if you've seen your diabetes care provider within the last 6 months, you may qualify for your own CGM right now. We'll do all the insurance paperwork and deliver your new CGM at little or no out-of-pocket cost to you. Medicare and most insurances will cover your CGM, so don't wait. Have your insurance handy and call the Aptiva Medical CGM Health Hotline right now.
800-946-6813. 800-946-6813. 800-946-6813. That's 800-946-6813.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
Box to Box row. To
Box to Row.
Box to Row.
Slip a sable under the tree.
Still to come here on Box to Row, actor, comedian, funny man Anthony Anderson going to join us on the program. So I've been wrestling, and happy holidays. Merry Christmas to you and yours. Happy holidays. Again, hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. I've really been wrestling with this matchup between South Carolina State and Jackson State. And I'm going to tell you, I think this may be, when you talk about the two teams, this may be the most even matchup that the Celebration Bowl has ever seen in its existence since 2015. I mean, you look at these teams, they're evenly matched in almost every way. That's the thing about it. So let's take it like this. South Carolina State has two losses. Jackson State has two losses. Jackson State lost to Louisiana Monroe. South Carolina State lost to Georgia Southern. Jackson State has won 9 in a row, and South Carolina State has won 8 in a row. Both teams are undefeated at home. Both teams beat, you know, so where they gave out money games, where they played Division II opponents, both teams won those games. So from that perspective, so evenly matched. Obviously, both teams won respective conference championships. But even if you look at the numbers, penalties, about the same. Third down conversions, about the same. Like, the matchup in this is just eerily even, right? Even if you look at it offensively, like South Carolina State, or I should say Jackson State, has the better running game, no doubt about it. Irv Mulligan, HBCU All-American, the SWAC Offensive Player of the Year, and rightfully so at the running back position, is absolutely tremendous. But South Carolina State has the better passing game. Now, Jacobian Morgan, the quarterback, and he got injured, injured a little bit in the victory in the SWAC championship game against Southern. And so did, now going back some weeks ago, Eric Phoenix, who was named this week the HBCU Offensive Player of the Year, had also gotten nicked up. But as a matter of fact, got nicked up. I think it may have been before the Morgan State game, because I had a chance to be at the Morgan State and South Carolina State game. And Ryan Stubblefield, the backup quarterback, for South Carolina State, he came in and did a really, really good job. But again, better running game for Jackson State, better passing game from an offensive standpoint for South Carolina State. But I'm going to tell you, that said, Jackson State has a good offense and a good passing game, specifically with Jacobian Morgan at the quarterback position. It's still not going to be that great a drop off. Let's say I don't know Morgan's. I hadn't heard that he wasn't going to play. So even if, let's say he doesn't, you still have a good quarterback situation with Jackson State. It's just unbelievable. Of course, in Zy McDonald, right? the receivers, like the receivers are, when you talk about South Carolina State and you talk about the receiving core, there may not be, I mean, you could argue that South Carolina State has maybe the best receiving core in FCS football. I mean, you could definitely make that argument. Okay, no doubt about it. Both of the top guys making first team all MEAC, right? So you could make that. You could definitely make that argument. Caden High, Justin Smith Brown, and Naj Carter, all really, really good, right? I mean, you look at the Jackson State side of things. Forderline, Spencer, Dupree, all really, really good. The one thing that, you know, in particular Morgan does is distributes the football extremely well. He does a good job of finding, you know, the receivers. And both have really good tight ends. I think the tight end situation, I would probably give the advantage to South Carolina State. I mean, if you looked at the numbers in the Massey ratings, South Carolina State, and I think South Carolina State has a couple of bigger wins because when you go on the road, you look at South Carolina State going on the road at the Citadel, coming away with that victory. I mean, that was a really, really big win for South Carolina State. Also at Tennessee Tech was a big win and should have won against Florida A&M as well. But didn't get that done. Although, and then you look at it on the flip side, you know, Jackson State was able to beat Florida A&M. I mean, I just think, you know, from a strength of schedule with the Massey ratings, South Carolina State is, I think it's like 10 schools ahead of, as a matter of fact, it's 10, couple of, maybe about 10 schools ahead of Jackson State, but then it goes, but like at number 9 is North Carolina Central. So, I you know, in that respect, if you look at the numbers and the Massey ratings take into account not only your wins, but your strength of schedule, it takes into account the opponents that you've beaten, the opponents that you've played, all of those kind of things. I think from a defensive standpoint, Jackson State's defense is better. Not by a whole lot, but it is better. You know, that said, I think South Carolina State has played, again, a better schedule. It has played a better schedule, a tougher schedule, if you will. And so I think if you look at it from that point, the numbers would suggest South Carolina, Jackson State. But look, Jackson State's got a really good secondary. I look at South Carolina State. South Carolina State is good, and the linebacker play is good. I also would point out Aaron Smith, the linebacker. He's going to play on Sundays for South Carolina State. He is really, 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 really good as well. When you look at the offensive line, South Carolina State's offensive line is incredible. And again, one of the best in FCS. You look at both of these coaches, assistant coaches for a good little while. You know, Chinnis Berry, an assistant coach for a lot longer. I think their paths may have crossed maybe around 2011, 2012, 2013, when T.C. Taylor was with Texas Southern. Chinnis Berry was at Southern. Maybe for like a year or two, their paths may have crossed. And T.C. Taylor in his second season as the head coach there at Jackson State, and Chinnis Berry in his first season as the head coach at South Carolina State. This is a really hard game to predict. Last year, I did go with Howard over Florida A&M, was wrong there. But the previous 2 years, I went with North Carolina Central over Jackson State. I went with South Carolina State over Jackson State in 2021 as well. Man, this is such a hard game to predict. You can look at all of the numbers, all of the playmakers, all of that. I think for me, South Carolina State has played a tougher schedule throughout the course of the season. If you look at the schedules, I think the schedule is tougher for South Carolina State. I look at Jackson State, you know, really good win over, you know, a conference opponent in Florida A&M. So, I mean, I give, you know, Jackson State certainly a lot of credit there because you're talking about being able to defeat the defending champions, being able to defeat Southern twice. I mean, that was a really, really good win. Outside of that, all the other wins were conference wins. And, I mean, you know, Arkansas, Pine Bluff, and Bethune-Cookman. Couple of things. South Carolina State, I think, is better tested in terms of playing opponents or having played opponents throughout the course of the year. I also think this, and you can look at this one of two ways. South Carolina State would have been off for almost a month by the time it plays in this game on Saturday. Meanwhile, Jackson State played the week before. So South Carolina State's going to be fresher. Now, sometimes you could argue, is it better to have played and consistently and then to have been off for 3 or 4 weeks? But I think in this instance, South Carolina State's going to be healthier coming into this ball game. And I like South Carolina State to defeat Jackson State in Atlanta on Saturday. This was a tough game to call for all of the reasons I laid out. Even across the board in most categories, I'm going to give the edge to South Carolina State. Your thoughts, you can hit me up via X at Box to Row, BoxToRow. Up next, we're talking with actor, comedian, all-around funny man, Anthony Anderson. This is your weekly edition of the HBCU Blitz powered by Box to Row. I'm Donald Ware. First, I'm going to take you to Valdosta, Georgia, for the quarterfinal Division II playoff matchup between Virginia Union and Valdosta State. Let's pick things up with about 5 minutes remaining in the second quarter. The Panthers of Virginia Union down 14-0, but driving.
Rosales hands it off. Byers is going to go into the end zone, right up the right side of the right guard. 4-8, Panther touchdown.
The HBCU National Player of the Year, Jada Byers from 7 yards out, and the Panthers closed the gap to 14-7. But on the ensuing possession, Valdosta State would respond.
Here's your 4th and 1 at the Panthers 48.
Got him.
Jump offside. Sammy going deep, going for, they get a penalty. But they make the catch, and that's going to be a touchdown. Even he was interfered with. And that's Rodney Bullard.
Oh, absolutely, it's Rodney
Bullard. We got a free play, and we go deep, and they were grabbing. Rodney got an interference call on it. He makes the catch anyway and rolls into the end zone.
From 38 yards, and Valdosta State extended its lead to 21-7, but the Blazers weren't done.
Sammy looks to throw. Going deep down the right side, looking for Bullard. Got a man. Got him at the end zone. Touchdown, Blazers!
Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh! Rodney with another one.
Oh my goodness!
That audio, courtesy of the Blazer Radio Network. 42 yards at that point. The Blazers led 28-7. Would go on to defeat Virginia Union 49-14. The Panthers end the season at 10-4 and a quarterfinal appearance in the Division II playoffs. To Jackson, Mississippi for the SWAC championship game between Jackson State and Southern. Let's pick things up with about 5 minutes remaining in the second quarter. The game tied at 3. Southern knocking on the door.
Second and goal for the Jaguars. T-Set from the gun takes a snap and he takes off. T-Set with the quarterback draw and he goes in for the touchdown. The Jaguars take their first lead at 9-3, pending the outcome of the point after.
The extra point was good and the Jaguars led 10-3. Now let's move to late in the second quarter. Jackson State with possession, looking to answer.
Second and goal now for JSU from the Jaguars' 2-yard line. Zy McDonald from the pistol formation gives it to Imari Matthews, and he is in for the touchdown.
And the Tigers tied the game at 10 heading into halftime. Now, the Tigers got the ball to begin the third quarter and move the ball down the field and
Zai hands it to Mulligan, takes it off the left side. He's grabbed by one, but fights his way in for the touchdown. Wow, he had three Jaguars on his back, coach, and was strong enough to take it in for the score.
From 2 yards for the SWAC Offensive Player of the Year, and the Tigers had the 17-10 lead. The Tigers would also get a field goal to extend the lead to 20-10. Now, with about 2 minutes remaining in the third quarter, Jackson State leading 20-10 and with possession.
McDonald in the shotgun, man in motion to the left. McDonald gets a snap, calls his own number, goes up the middle, angles to his right. He's at the 10-5, touchdown.
You know the Hall of Famer, Rob J, on the JSU Sports Network. The rout was on as Jackson State defeated Southern 41-13 in the SWAC championship game. Will now face South Carolina State this Saturday in Atlanta for the HBCU National Championship. And don't forget the HBCU coaches and media polls naming the national champion will be released on Monday. And you can view the polls online at BoxToRow.com. The HBCU Superlative Awards were released earlier this week. And the HBCU Offensive Player of the Year was Virginia Union running back Jada Byers. The Defensive Player of the Year was Southern defensive lineman Kelby Jones. And you can view the Superlative Awards in their entirety at BoxToRow.com. Box to Row, the radio show, airs weekly on radio stations across the country, as well as on Sirius XM channels 142 and 84. To listen to the show or for more information, visit BoxToRow.com. Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. We're going to keep things moving here on the program. We're joined by a gentleman, as a matter of fact, one of the funny men of our time. You're going to know him from Black-ish. You're going to know him from Law and Order, Barbershop, The Departed, Transformers, so many other things. Matter of fact, you may have seen him on Monday night in The Real Full Monty. And I tell you what, he's been getting real about diabetes. He's the one and only Anthony Anderson, and he joins us here on the program. What's going on, Anthony? Welcome back to the program.
I'm all right, brother. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, the last time we talked, I gotta ask you about this. Of course, we're going to talk about, of course, you getting real about diabetes. And for more information, people can find out at getrealaboutdiabetes.com. The thing that's different this time than the last time we talked about 9 or 10 years ago, you were a Howard alum. Now you're a Howard graduate. Speak to that and you going back and getting your degree a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I went back in 2022. And got my degree from the College of Fine Arts, man. My son was accepted to Howard University in 2018. And I said, you know what, son? I said, I only need 15 credits to graduate. I said, I'm going to walk with you in 2022. And that's what I did. And now, since I've received my degree, we've been talking about me teaching a master class this spring semester at Howard at the College of Fine Arts. So I'm excited about that as well.
No doubt about it. Now, I can't remember if it was you or, I mean, we've had so many, Wendy Raquel Robinson, like so many of these guests. You were in a class or at Howard at a time when there was just all of this talent, Liz Alonzo. I think it was like so many people either in your class or going to Howard at the same time you were going there. It's absolutely incredible. I mean, you could equate Howard University as like the UCLA or the USC of the East.
Yeah. No, it was interesting. You know, with myself, Taraji P. Henson, Paula J. Parker, Wendy Raquel Robinson, Wendy Davis, Carl Anthony Payne. And then, you know, a year or so later, we had A.J. Calloway. You know, Laz Alonzo, Lance Bass. I mean, the list goes on and on about the people who walk through those hallowed hallways of Howard University.
The one and only Anthony Anderson joining us here on the program. So what made you get real about diabetes?
You know, man, my son will be 25. So yeah, 24, almost 25 years ago, I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. I was the first person in my family that was diagnosed with it, you know, but years had gone by, and then my father was diagnosed with diabetes, but we found out that he had had diabetes probably 20, 25 years undiagnosed. And, you know, unfortunately, I lost my father to complications from the disease, and that's what made me get real about it. You know, I didn't want the same thing to happen to my children by losing me the way that I lost my dad. And it was just a wake-up call about, you know, spreading information, in particular to men who very seldom go to the doctor to get checked up. So I teamed up with Novo Nordisk, and here we are talking about type 2 diabetes. And, you know, we've created a website for information, and that's getrealaboutdiabetes.com, where people can go to ask their questions, get their questions answered, and learn more about this this disease that, you know, a lot of us have.
No doubt about it, and particularly prevalent, you said, amongst men, and particularly in the Black community. I think one of the things I read at this website, getrealaboutdiabetes.com, that you talked about, you know, I went to the doctor maybe about a couple of months ago. My sugar levels have fluctuated to the point that I'm right at that 7, you know, that if you will, magic number, that 7.0 number. I don't want to do the medicine thing, just like you didn't want to do. I didn't want to do that. So I said, okay, I'm going to do the exercise and so forth and try to get it down. And I've done that, and we'll see what happens in a couple of months. But speak to having to go on the medicine that really helps you to control the diabetes.
Yeah, you know, everybody, every individual is different. So, you know, I would suggest everybody go to the doctors, listen to what, you know, their endocrinologists or their doctor may be telling them. But every case is different. You know, for me, just like you, and not unlike a lot of other men, it's like, oh, no, I can beat this on my own. I can do this. I don't want to get on meds. I don't want to do this. But, you know, it's about making a lifestyle change. It's making a conscious effort to change our diet, to change the things that we're eating and we're putting into our body, to change our productivity. But most importantly, you know, listening to what the professionals have to say. And if the professional tells you that you need a certain medication or whatnot, you know, don't fight that. You know, listen to what they're saying, take it in, and adhere to it. And, you know, make healthy lifestyle changes, and you would definitely see a difference in what your body is going through and how you're going to move on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, and then we've seen you on, you know, Food Network and the various shows, you know, that you've been able to do sort of a transformation for you. Can you speak to it's like all-inclusive. It's the exercise. It's the changing of eating, like you said, in the last couple of months. But I'm going to tell you what, I missed those Hershey chocolate bars. I got to be honest with you. You know, you get those cravings, right? But it's, you know, it's a lifestyle change. It's the mindset as well. Speak to all of those things that have helped you to be able to control your diabetes.
Yeah, and, you know, it's all about balance. And, you know, and that's what your doctor's going to tell you. You know, it's about finding a healthy balance in what it is that you want to do. You know, I occasionally still eat a candy bar from time to time because of the cravings that I have, but I understand what that may do and how that may spike my sugar levels. So, you know, there are consequences to our actions. And if you're willing to deal with that, then that's what you have to do. You're just going to have to work out a little harder. You know, you're going to have to drink a little more water, or at least that's what I do. And just go hard in the paint with that. But it's about finding that balance in your daily life, about the things that you're going to eat, and listening to what your doctor has to say and what they prescribe for you to do.
The one and only Anthea Anderson joining us here on the program. I got to be honest with you, mentioned going hard in the paint. You know, I call basketball games, and after the games, they'll have this Chick-fil-A box. You know, you got the chicken sandwich and all that is great. The chips I can do without. But that chocolate chip cookie, like I couldn't resist it. You're right. You have to maintain it. But, man, I just couldn't resist. I couldn't I couldn't resist that chocolate chip cookie from Chick-fil-A. And that's one of the struggles sometimes. You mentioned having a candy bar, but it's all in moderation, right, Anthony?
It's all in moderation. Look, you don't have to eat the whole cookie. I'm sitting here having breakfast with you right now. They put 3 pancakes on my plate. I'm going to eat a half of one pancake and not dip it in the syrup. So, you know, it's all about making those changes for you.
No doubt about it. The one and only Anthony Anderson joining us here on the program. Get real about diabetes.com for more information. I got to ask you, Anthony, does it feel like, you know, Hustle and Flow, such an iconic film. Does it feel like it's been 20 years since Hustle and Flow?
You said it's been 20 years since Hustle and Flow?
Yes.
Oh, wow. That was, man. But and it's also a classic.
Yes.
You know, it's also a classic film that a lot of people still, that it still resonates with. You know, one of the ones that I talk about often.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And then I got to ask you, Black-ish, man, is such an iconic program. So funny. As a matter of fact, I had a chance to see Dion Cole right here in Raleigh when he performed with Martin back in October. Speak to Black-ish, I guess, the concept and how iconic it is, even though it's only been off the air for 2 years. One of the greatest shows of all time.
Yeah, one of the greatest shows of all time. I would have to agree. You know, we gave you 8 years, 175 episodes, you know, to talk about real issues and real things that we all go through as a community. But, you know, when Kenya Barris and I sat down and talked about the type of television that we wanted to do, we looked at the shows that we grew up watching, All in the Family, The Jeffersons, Good Times, The Cosby Show. And we looked at the landscape of television and what was missing for us as viewers, he and I. And those were the shows that we missed. And we wanted to make a show in the same vein as all of those shows. Characters that were unapologetic, that were in your face, and that were authentic to themselves and speaking their truth. And I believe that's what we did with our television show. And that's why it resonates with an audience the way that it does. You know, I travel extensively around the world, and, you know, our television show is seen in the Middle East in places like Saudi Arabia and Qatar. And they were like, yo, man, you need to do a Saudi-ish. You know, you need to do a Qatar-ish. And just to see how our show has transcended the States, and it has gone around the world, lets me know that, you know, we tapped into what it is that we sought out to do. But again, it's just a show that was authentic to itself and just spoke its own truth. And I believe that is what kept people watching our show for 8 years.
Absolutely. Last couple of thoughts, Anthony. We appreciate the time. Want to respect the time. Can't get away without asking you about sports. You're from Compton. Now, I know you got to be a big L.A. Lakers fan.
Man, you look here, man. You know you'd be seeing me at the Clipper games. I grew up a Laker fan. I still am a fan. Why are you bringing up the Lakers? Talk to me.
No, just generally speaking, although they won that NBA Cup last year, now there's some struggles with the Lakers. I mean, no shade, because look, let me tell you, you know, now you went to Howard and all that kind of stuff. I'm from the Washington area. Both of my parents actually went to Howard. Look, I'm a Wizards fan, man. Like, I'm not talking about anybody. We're awful, but I'm just saying the Lakers not doing as well this year so far.
I mean, you know, all teams have a period in which, you know, they're transitioning. You know, we have LeBron James, one of the greatest to ever play, you know, who's been in this league 20-plus years. You know, that takes its toll. It's about rebuilding. It's about bringing in new talent with fresh legs and looking towards the future. Now, you know, we may not win every game currently, but it's not about – it's not always about the here and the now. It's about what's going to happen in the future. And so, you know, I think the Lakers are going through a transitional stage right now. you know, finding the right pieces to the puzzle. You know, unfortunately, you know, we will be losing LeBron. So it's about how are you going to build the team? What's going to be the nucleus of the team in the next 2 to 3 years? And that is that's a process. And I think all teams go through that. All great teams go through that. You know, you get to the top of the mountain and eventually, you know, you are forced off the top of that mountain. And I think that's where we are right now.
Look, I'm not, believe me, Anthony, I'm not here to throw any shade. The Bullets got to the top of the mountain in 1978. It's 2024. We haven't even sniffed the top of the mountain in that time frame.
Well, sometimes it takes a little bit longer sometimes, you know what I mean? It may take a few generations to get back up there, but I have faith. You know, I have faith in your Washington team.
All right, get real about diabetes.com is the website. Anthony Anderson talking with us about diabetes, the seriousness of it, particularly in the Black community and amongst men. Again, get real about diabetes.com. The one and only Anthony Anderson joining us here on the program. Anthony, great to catch up with you. Continued success in all you do.
Well, you know, I want to speak something to, you know, the Washington Wizards again. The Washington Bullets reached their peak back in the 70s. The Wizards haven't been that long. So, I mean, you know, you just look at it that way, if you can. You know, it hasn't been that long for the Wizards. It's been a long time for the Bullets, not the Wizards.
You know, I appreciate you saying
that. Helps you out any kind of
way. Well, yeah, no, I was going to say, I appreciate you saying that, Anthony, but it's one in the same. You said the Washington team, you were right. It's one in the same. Nah, man, I thank you for that, but nah, I don't know what to say, man. We got to do something different in Washington.
All right, my friend.
All right, we appreciate the time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, brother. Have a great day, man. And don't keep me off your radio station for 10 years again.
I will. Hey, we've been trying to catch up. I've been trying to catch up with you for the last 6 or 7.
All right. Well, you got me now.
Yes, sir. We sure do.
You got me now.
We sure do. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, bro. Have a great one.
Okay, you too. That was Anthony Anderson joining us here on Box to Row. We got more of the program on the other side.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
SMU belongs, regardless, and this is the thing, regardless of what happens against Clemson in the ACC championship game, SMU belongs in this playoff. I looked at what SMU has done this year, and SMU has had a really, really, really good season. You know, remember, coming from the Group of Five, where it was the AAC champion last year, so it was no surprise to me that SMU would come into the ACC and wreck shop, and that is what SMU is doing.
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports, and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
It's Donald Ware, From the Press Box to Press Row.
Thank you for making Box to Row a part of your day. In the last segment, we were joined by the one and only Anthony Anderson. This has been a good season in terms of HBCU football. Congratulations to Virginia Union. Made it all the way to the quarterfinals of the Division II playoffs. Fell to Valdosta State last week, but won two games in the playoffs. Congratulations to Dr. Alvin Parker and the Panthers, having one of the best players in the whole country in Jada Byers, the running back. And, you know, I had a chance to last week on the conference call with Dr. Parker. He spoke about, of course, the upcoming matchup against Valdosta State. And, I mean, he's done a really, really good job there at Virginia Union, and had a chance on that call to talk with him about what he saw maybe the first couple of years when Virginia Union made it to the playoffs and didn't was one and done. And then this year, all of a sudden, and I asked him about recruiting and how he went about his recruiting to try to make his team not only better, but better to be able to compete in the playoffs. And he talked about that a lot. And so anytime you have a guy like a Jada Byers, but then they have Reginald Vick Jr., the wide receiver, HBCU All-Americans, only two wide receiver spots, and he had one of them. I mean, he's an absolutely tremendous. So congratulations to Virginia Union. Look, Tennessee State winning the Big South OVC championship, making it to the FCS playoffs with an at-large berth. Two Miles won a football game in the first round of the Division II playoffs as well. So this has been a really solid season for HBCU football. And by the way, not only has it been a solid season, but this has, in fact, been a good week for coaches who are either HBCU alums or have HBCU ties. For instance, Willie Simmons, former head football coach at Florida A&M, former head football coach at Prairie View A&M. Also, if you remember, after when he played ball, he played at Clemson. He had graduated, was transferring to Florida A&M because he thought Florida A&M had made the transition to, at that time, 1A, and then had all these NCAA sanctions. So he ended up finishing his career at the Citadel. Well, Willie Simmons, who was actually left Florida A&M after last season, became the running backs coach at Duke, now was introduced earlier this week as the new head football coach at Florida International. So congratulations to Willie Simmons. And by the way, remember this. This is nothing new for Florida International in terms of hiring former HBCU coaches. Remember, Mervell Melendez, the longtime baseball coach at Bethune-Cookman and then also at Alabama State, was hired, maybe 6 or 7 years ago now, as the head baseball coach there at Florida International. Also, Jerry Mack, former head football coach at North Carolina Central, was at Tennessee as the running backs coach. And then this past year was the running backs coach with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Well, he is now the new head football coach at Kennesaw State. And he's also an alum. His first year as a student athlete was at Jackson State. So congratulations also to Jerry Mack. You talk about coaches, and, you know, we talked about Charles Huff, the now former head football coach at Marshall. He's now the head football coach at Southern Miss, was introduced as the new head football coach at Southern Miss earlier this week. And so congratulations to him. And then also congratulations goes out to Tremaine Jackson, who's the head football coach at Valdosta State. Tremaine Jackson is a Texas Southern alum and has Valdosta State in the Division II semifinal. So congratulations to Tremaine Hawkins, excuse me, as well. I want to get back to Charles Huff. And as I mentioned on last week's show, I had a chance to be, excuse me, in Harrisonburg at the JMU and Marshall game. And Marshall came all the way back and won that game in overtime. And it enabled Marshall to be able to play in the championship game, the Sun Belt champion or Sun Belt Conference championship game against Louisiana last week, which it won. So he was able to deliver a championship to Marshall. It's the first championship since Marshall's been an FBS program and the first championship for Marshall in many, many years, because remember, Marshall was a power, excuse me, in the FCS for many, many years. Well, you know, he left, and I wondered about that. I was like, well, you know, that's kind of interesting to leave Marshall, where he had done a really, really good job, to go to another FBS or another mid-major or group of five, if you will, FBS program. I thought that was interesting. I thought, shoot, he should have been. I don't know all the inner workings of West Virginia, but, you know, the West Virginia job was open. He's right there. Marshall did a really good job. Again, as we talked about last week, had some experience under, you know, Nick Saban, which actually led to him getting the job at Marshall. Why maybe he wasn't considered. I don't know if he was considered for that West Virginia job, but I thought he certainly would have been considered, and I think he was considered maybe for some Power 5 jobs. But now I understand. I was interested in that. There was an article actually in the New York Times that spoke about Charles Huff. This was his last year. Okay, this was his, now I get it. Marshall didn't have a great season last year. The thundering herd was 6-6, but in previous years he was building to that, right? 4 years at Marshall, and in reading this article in the New York Times, come to find out that Huff and Marshall could not come to an agreement on an extension. And a lot of times you don't have, but his buyout, if I remember reading this correctly, was dollar for dollar. So it wasn't like, and he was making $750,000 as the head coach at Marshall. So, you know, if Marshall bought him out, it would have had to pay $750,000 to buy him out. And Marshall got off to the slow start, 0-3. So I thought that was rather interesting. And so now it explains. And the other thing was this, as I listened and I spoke, talked with you about this last week, I listened to a lot of Charles Huff's press conferences. I listened to his press conference after the victory over James Madison. I listened to his press conference, his weekly press conference leading in to the Sun Belt Conference title game. And he always talked about how, you know, if he was going to be there or be at Marshall next year, he always would say it's out of his control. And I thought that was interesting, and not understanding or knowing the dynamics of what was being spoken about. And now I do, because it was in the last year of his contract. And, you know, I wonder what's going now. Marshall has gone with the former NC State defensive coordinator as its new head football coach, Tony Gibson, right? A lot of what the AD for Marshall said was, well, you know, it's great because it's great to have a coach that knows the state of West Virginia. I mean, okay, fine. But Charles Huff won a championship there. I mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm not an insider, and we'll bring Coach Huff on as soon as we're able to bring him on to talk about this situation. If he's willing to talk about it, I mean, I would have to imagine that once the season was over, he did what he needed to do. He won the championship. He was going to be out. It was nothing that Marshall could say, because he probably felt some kind of way about not getting an extension coming into the season. And like I said, in college football, it takes time to build a program. You know, it takes time to build a program. It takes years. He had a down year in 2023. That's going to happen sometime. He started 0-3 in 2024. But guess what? Went all the way to and led the Thundering Herd to the Sun Belt Conference title this year. That's not an easy feat. That's a very tough conference. App State, you know, Tulane, others are in that conference. That's a very, very tough conference. So we'll see, hopefully, about getting Coach Huff on the program here sometime soon. And again, as a reminder, Charles Huff, the second HBCU grad to become a head football coach at an FBS institution. Of course, he graduated from Hampton. Look, my time is about up. I thank you for yours. Thank you to Anthony Anderson for joining us here on Box to Road. The next several weeks will be our annual year-end review shows. So as a matter of fact, get ready for those. Super exciting to take a listen back at some of the great conversations we had in 2024. For more information on Box to Row, you can visit our website, boxtorow.com. Also, follow Box to Row on X at BOXTOROW, as well as on Instagram. And always remember to support those that support you. Box to Row is produced by DW Communications.